The spirit of Sierra entered her tiny white body for 8 whole counts, and she slammed it.
EW Podcast is
right. Fierce, fierce, fierce.
I love this podcast.
Fierce, fierce. Weather, fierce. Food, fierce.
Hello, I'm Joey Nolfi, Entertainment Weekly's RuPaul's Drag Race reporter, but coming to you in my second form today as a googly eye puppet, as we fittingly broadcast live from the googly eye factory of the arts where they design and assemble hand puppets with the finest of googly eyes, including Plain Jane and the Lollapalooza episode couch, as well as Megami's instantly iconic dance partner puppet for the final lip sync.
And I'm Jillian Cederholm, EW's news director, and you'll have to excuse me if I seem off today. I've just come down with a severe case of brunosis.
How are you seeking treatment for that?
I just yell, brunosis, do your thing, like RuPaul.
Is it working?
We'll see by the end of this episode. Please check in with me.
Sadly, you might pass away at some point throughout this episode.
My dream transitioning into the afterlife.
Well, Jillian Closet, for our dear listeners, since you and I are broadcasting today in googly eye form, can you please describe what I look like in this form to our listeners?
I can't really. Hold on. Let me clean my glasses. I can't really.
Oh, no. Okay. So, continuing Jillian Closet's visual gags for our non-visual podcast, she has taken a pair of glasses, cut out paper circles, and put little black dots in the middle.
How dare you? Those are my real eyes. Hold on.
Oh my god. I love this. Oh, she has them on her hands too. Wait, I can't see. Wait, hold on. Pull it back. This is why Jillian Closet and I are perfect on this podcast, because Jillian is committed to visual gags and I am committed to creating oral soundscapes for listeners. So,
Michelle's been married 27 years. She hasn't done an oral soundscape in years. What was her joke? Sorry, her poor husband.
Oh, no. No. Well, I guess I'll take that as my answer.
May I call you Googly?
Yes, you may. And make sure you stay tuned later in the episode where we have an interview with Evie Oddly about her new book and also some reactions to the lip syncs in the Lollapalooza that we saw this episode. Before we get into this week's recap, we do just want to take a moment to send good thoughts to Katya, who announced last week that she is in treatment and had to cancel her tour with Trixie Mattel as a result. So sending all the best to her as she prioritizes her well-being. And we certainly, you know, wish the best outcome throughout all of this. So thinking of Katya as we broadcast this episode. But in brighter news, this week's episode is the sort of season 16 reunion that begins with all of the eliminated queens returning to the workroom. I don't know if we can fully classify this as the reunion. I know the reunion is in the title, but it doesn't really feel like a reunion to me. But Amanda immediately says that she is annoyed to see Plain Jane in the top three. And Q says that she is disappointed to have missed the finale, and Plasma, of course, immediately makes Maya, also known as Myra on this podcast, do the I'm great share voice, which kicks things off in the best way. So it really was nice to have all of them back in the workroom. I love it when they have these Lollapalooza episodes. I love it. But Rue then enters and informs them all that they are performing in the Lollapalooza with slightly altered rules that I am excited to see if Jillian Closet understands or not. But the queens are doing this in pursuit of the title of Queen of She Done Already Done Had Herses and a $50,000 prize. And it is important to note that this marks the fifth consecutive episode that Geneva has lip-synced on, meaning that she is now lip-synced on every single episode she has ever appeared on. And Maya, aka Myra, also really cracked me up by saying that Morphine only won the lip sync against her because Maya let her win and only gave 65% of her overall energy, which, if throwing her dress on Morphine was Maya at 65%, I really hate to see what it have been if she turned it up to a sensible 74%. All the queens then make their way to the stage, which RuPaul calls the, quote, new and improved stage for RuPaul's Drag Race, which I believe it was the Secret Celebrity Drag Race season 2 stage. So still, it looked like it to me. But either that or Queen of the, was it maybe the Queen of the Universe stage? I don't know. It definitely was not the main stage.
Is it bad that I notice all this random stuff in the background all the time, but I didn't even notice it was a different stage?
Are you serious? I was like,
wow, they really made it look fancy.
No, it is completely different. I think it's the Celebrity Drag Race stage, but still TBD on if this is in fact the new stage going forward on the show or not. And I just want to go back a few sentences. And this is why Jillian Closet is essential to this, because she wrote in that note about it being a sensible 74%. So thank you, Jillian, for correcting my original number. I think I wanted to initially write 69%, but
no, it wasn't even that bad. It was just a 70, just boring. Okay. So because I have famously been unable to understand basic rules related to Drag Race twists in the past, famously including the Fame Games, which I still I don't even remember them, and I don't have any concept of what they were, or how we voted, how they were decided. Joey has written this portion of the script to allow me to explain the rules of Lollapalooza. Okay, so I'm learning them now as I read.
Yes.
And they even had that visual on.
Yes,
on
they
it,
did.
Thank God, but okay, so round one includes 4 one-on-one lip syncs. So 2 queens against each other and 1 group of 3 with the 4 winners. Okay, I'm sorry. 4 one-on-one lip syncs plus 1 group of 3, that's 5. There would be 5 winners.
Jillian, read on.
Okay, with 4 winners of the first. Okay, hold on. With the 4 winners of, this is why I never got word problems.
Oh my God. This with is
the 4
torture.
Winners of the first 4 groups advancing to round 2. And the winner of the 3-person lip sync advancing to round 3.
Yes.
Round 2 features 2 one-on-one pairings, with the winner of that automatically advancing to the final round 4.
Yes.
Round 3, so a whole round of only 1 lip sync.
Yes.
Includes 1 one-on-one. It's too many ones. Includes 1 one-on-one pairing. And that person advances to the final. Also, is the final round 4? Yes.
Yes.
Round 4 is the final. Okay. Also, the first queen with her name chosen from Bruno's ball machine gets to pick who she lip syncs against.
Yes. And all of the pairings.
Every round. And then that person gets to decide the song.
Yes. And then I didn't write it out for you, Jillian. The final round is 1 one-on-one pairing to determine the winner. So do you understand this?
Well, I mean, I didn't understand how.
The answer is yes, Jillian.
I felt like there were some people who were lip syncing too many times or not enough. Like, it didn't seem totally fair. I really hated the 3-on-3. No, 1-on-1-on-1. What is it? Yeah, 3-person. I don't know. That's not fair. Like, if they had just had a top 4, we wouldn't have had to have all this random shit of like someone going to round 6. It was just crazy.
Was weird.
It threw me off as soon as we got to the 3.
Yeah, I do like the idea of having a top 4. I don't like the idea of having a top 3. I like the lip sync SmackDown rounds. The top 4 would have just made it be more like season 14's lip sync Lollapalooza, where everybody was just going against each other. So I don't quite get the number thing, because it just seems like added confusion when was kind of avoidable. But I still like these episodes. I love the Lollapalooza episodes. I think they're so exciting. I think that lip syncing is like one of the most fun things on this show. And I was Rihanna at the 2013 VMAs with her popcorn sitting there watching this. I love it, because it feels like the stakes aren't really that high. It just feels like an episode where people are just kind of having fun and performing, and even the queens that lost outside of Myra did not seem too plucked. So it just seems like a good time. And I also really, it was so funny, did you notice that the little teeny tiny pink velvet rope separating the queens who had won from the ones who had yet to lip sync?
Oh yeah, I remember now that you said
funny.
That.
Yeah, yeah. I laugh so hard, and that is the tiniest little velvet rope. It is so funny.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about these episodes. Like, I mean, I would have rather watched this in a bar than in
home. For
and
sure.
I did watch it the first time on a phone, an iPhone 8. So that was really not an optimal viewing experience.
You watch this on your iPhone?
I was having my Wi-Fi was out, and so I watched it. I did go back and like watch it again on a computer screen this morning, thankfully. But that was just really. I don't know about that experience.
Well, so Jillian, that's why you missed that it wasn't a news that it was a new stage because you're watching it on your fucking iPhone. Yes.
And then I was too busy like pausing on all the crowd shots. There was one where this woman is just fully yawning, which I thought was very funny. And then, so yeah.
Well, let's so talk.
I don't know if it was my favorite one, but I have famously I have famously confessed on here that. Many of the lip syncs are not actually my favorite part of the show because what I'm looking for in a lip sync, I'm not that impressed by someone mouthing the words to a song, honestly. Sorry to everyone who loves lip syncs.
I love that you called that a confession when you famously have shat on lip syncs many times, poopsied on lip syncs in the past. So, well,
I mean, you know, like I just everyone knows, like I am a lover of stunts. I like a wig reveal. I like something that makes me laugh or just like is so physical that it blows me away.
You know, this episode's going to give you that.
It gave me it a couple times. I think we were off to a very slow start, in my opinion. And there was a couple of people that I was like, I mean, I don't want to be unfair because when they're doing a lip sync at a club, they're obviously they're picking their own song.
I was going to say, this is the foundation of drag, Jillian. This is the building blocks of drag. And
yes, I know. But there were plenty of people that I was like, okay, would watching this person who maybe I haven't seen in a while now do this performance make me immediately want to go like, oh, I want to go see their show at a club. And there were many that I was like, oh, I guess we kind of saw what we were going to see from them. So I don't know. I think I was kind of disappointed in some of them.
And we'll get into that, but before we talk about the individual lip syncs, I know that you really want to talk about some of the looks. So let's talk about their looks that they all came out in, because there are some, I don't think there was any lip sync looks that I was like, oh, she looks amazing. Hershey, I thought looked good. But
there were three people who I felt
talk about Tsunami.
Yes, but oh no, first, I mean, I think there were three people that I did feel
Dawn looked good,
looked
too.
Amazing, or maybe two and a half that I did feel looked amazing, and that was mm-hmm. our top three.
These are the
queens that have now had to show so many looks, including like the book challenge where you're doing like two looks. Like they have like, I don't know how they have any costumes left, let alone Saphira with another giant
gown,
like crate worthy like hat and dress, and like they still come out like this is such a throwaway episode for them. They could have just worn like a tracksuit and they all looked so good. And like Nymphia's paint, like I thought she looked amazing. Saphira and Jane's or Plains was a lot of fun, so like hats off to them. Whereas if you're somebody coming back, like I know like a lip sync you have to wear an outfit that at least makes you move, although Maya all the time is she's always has something where I'm like you're gonna get tripped up, you can't flip in that, and she like never does. She always
Morphine too off. I thought for sure Morphine was going to get tripped up by her. She was like almost stepping over that black glittery gown when she came out on the stage. I was like, oh, girl.
Yeah, no, but I guess when you are that much of a pro. But yes, we have to talk about Tsunami because for one.
Oh, God.
I mean, where do we start? What is it? I literally thought it was the Plasma's Tweedledee Tweedledum outfit at first until I looked back.
That's so funny. And Tsunami is typically so gorgeous. Like she has good looks. I mean,
face wig gorgeous, neck down.
Face wig gorgeous, yes, neck down. I was like,
she was not in the competition long enough to be out of outfits and have this be the only thing you can move in left in her. And then she said the thing about, well, I had the choice between like making myself look skinny and like snatching myself or wearing something I could move in. And I chose looking skinny. But like you're wearing fluffy like page boy pants. Like you don't, I mean, you look skinny because you are skinny. Like it's not like you're wearing like a form fitting tight dress. Like I just don't understand the choice.
Tsunami. Oh, our dear Tsunami. And this is, you know, it's a misstep for her, but I think it's created some pretty funny commentary online so far, even though the episode, like, at the time of this recording has not even aired yet. So, like, I did see people already, like, talking about this and being like, what the hell is going on? Like, there's that one image that it says that they look like Pokemon trainers or something, her and Plasma standing next to each other, I think. And it's like, yeah, it was definitely, because it's not even like I could see someone like Crystal Method pulling this look off if she did like kooky makeup and wigs and like making it at least something that is so off that it's on. But Tsunami is just so classically beautiful that yes. It just looked odd on her. So apologies to Tsunami, but girl.
Yeah, we love you. So happy to see you back. I don't know. Maybe there's more to it. Maybe this is straight off of a Paris catwalk or something.
Maybe so.
And also, I don't know. That was my thing where I was like Dawn also is wearing the zebra cat suit that she wore at least twice in two different runway looks.
Yeah.
And then this draped fabric randomly that I think might be from her doll challenge. It looks like the same fabric.
Oh yeah.
So that also, I was just like it was so distracting to me. If she had at least just worn the bodysuit, I'd be like, okay, I can see her moving, but I guess she wanted something kind of flowing, but it just kept distracting me. So I don't know. I'm no fashion girl, but to me, it was,
I think, Q and Dawn both seemed like to know that they were not going to go very far in a lip sync Lollapalooza. So, I mean, I think maybe they, you know, Dawn just wanted to look good.
It's interesting because if, like, we know that the finale has already been, as it happened, like, there was not a live finale this year because we were not invited. So, and the final is next week. So, if there is any kind of lip sync element in the finale, but I'm assuming there is. So you would think that they would pack something for a finale. Yeah. So why not come out in that, like, what you would have lip synced in if you had made it to the end? So does that mean that, like, Dawn did not think she was going to make it to the finale, or Tsunami just, like, entered the competition not thinking she would make it to the finale and have to lip sync?
Maybe they told them that they have to wear in this one that they were not allowed. Maybe they're not allowed to wear looks like that. They weren't allowed to wear anything that they had brought specifically for the runway. And maybe they told them bring an extra lip sync outfit specifically for a lip sync episode. And they probably had to wear whatever they brought for that, because I think they have to get all looks cleared for certain episodes. So they probably said, this episode, you have to wear the look that you brought to lip sync in.
Maybe so.
Yeah, maybe so. All right. Well, we don't have time to break down all of the individual lip syncs, but we'll go by round and point out some highlights. So round one was Dawn versus Amanda, Q versus Megami, Morphine versus Geneva, Mirage versus Hershey, and Maya versus Plasma, with Amanda, Megami, Morphine, Mirage, and Maya all advancing.
Maya versus Plasma versus Tsunami. Sorry.
Oh, yes. Maya versus Plasma versus Tsunami. Yeah. The aforementioned queens all advanced. So, Megami surprising everybody. I thought she did well in this one. Hershey again was the first one where I was like, okay, I think Hershey deserved to win. I really enjoyed Hershey's performance. I thought she was so funny. Whereas Mirage was, and Mirage is another one who, like, I mean, I love Mirage, but I don't know. I feel like these lip syncs, I was not, I think that maybe Mirage's very short legacy has already built her up into something that is like, okay, oh my God, she's going to decimate these lip syncs. And then I was like, these performances are not necessarily like the decimation that I think I was expecting. And I do, you know, think that Hershey gave a more entertaining and fun performance to the song than Mirage did. So I would have given that win to Hershey. And also I thought that, you know, it was funny, maybe not in the way that Plasma had intended it to be, but I thought it was funny the way that Plasma was trying to was it Plain that said that Plasma out-slutted Maya or something during the milkshake song? And I was like, I thought that stuff was kind of funny. But
I mean, at least Plasma was trying. Trying. He was modeling, but what are you modeling that outfit?
This episode, I'm sorry. Like, yeah, Tsunami, we the look was something, sorry. But like this performance was just cracking me up so much. Tsunami is just like, she just tickles me so much. I just, even though, yes, we knew from the moment this started that Tsunami was not going to win this lip sync, but it was just so amusing watching her just kind of like trot around the stage in this outfit. So funny.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think about Q not until she was announced as losing doing the flash, and that there were actually, and they looked pretty small, like Fisher Price.
I have notes on that.
Boobs under there. And I was wondering if maybe she didn't do it because it was specifically the Janet Jackson song, and that would be like tasteless because of the Super Bowl moment, although it would actually be more fitting in some regards too. Yeah, but that was just a weird move, knowing that RuPaul would probably get a kick out of that and then not doing it at all during the performance.
I just pulled up my notes. That was a note that I had. I had like, she said that she's not worried that she lost because she didn't expect to win the whole thing. But then like, why have the reveal in the first place if that's your thought? And then why do it after you lose? I just, it was like, if you can sense that Megami is doing the most next to you, like, why would you not pull that out? I still don't think it would have saved, like, I think Megami still would have won, but it was very weird to do it my notes, after.
This is the one where the woman in the audience was yawning. I just have to point out. It was right when Rue introduced it, and I was like, oh God, Q versus Megami, but.
Well, the one that I really liked, and I will say that this, it might not be like technically the best lip sync we've ever seen, but I do think the structure of Morphine's lip sync against Geneva was borderline genius, because she was watching, if you watch, she was looking and watching at what Geneva was doing, and then literally 30 seconds later proceeded to do a series of, I believe, three moves that Geneva had done 30 seconds prior, and either was doing them like with an added twist or like doing them multiple times better. So like when she was doing the thing with the arm and spinning around, she was like looking at her nails as if like, oh, this is so easy to do. It was genius. I was snapping when Morphine did that. It was so good. And I mean, that to me, I was like, put her back in the competition. I was like, that moment was
no, this was so the good. First time that I started to perk up during this episode. That was so great. That was great. That was exactly what I'm looking for. Like, it was like she was like stalking her prey in the beginning. Just like, oh, that's cute. Now let me go off and do it. And then the surprise wig reveal, I didn't see it coming when I watched it again. Maybe it was because I was on my iPhone. When I watched it again on a larger screen, you could start to see the red peeking out, but I didn't see it coming at all the first time I watched it. And I thought it was so natural the way she did it. And yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I love that one.
I did too. Okay. So round two, or I'm sorry, I'm stepping on Jillian's lines.
Oh, wow. Okay. Here comes my big line. Ready? Round two features Amanda versus Megami and Mirage versus Morphine.
What else did you have to add to this Jillian closet?
Okay, so this is our two winners from the beginning coming back to prove that their wins were warranted round. So were they?
I think that Amanda or that Megami absolutely won over Amanda. I think that simulation of the act, we'll call it, was so funny. I mean, yes, we've seen drag queens do this on stage many, many times before, like at local clubs or whatever, but seeing it on RuPaul's Drag Race and the fact that they did not blur it out at all was really funny. So, and that carries through with Megami's approach to what I believe she said in the final lip sync, was she is going to try to like out stupid people. And I think that that is the surefire, the moment she started doing that, she won that lip sync. Amanda could have done six wig reveals in a row and Megami still would have won that lip sync. So I also love that Amanda, like I asked you about this in the exit interview last week and she didn't really give a straight answer. It was kind of like a sarcastic answer, but like, why are all of these queens doing the Q backup booty tooch on the floor? Like, we've now seen Q, Plasma, Dawn, and Amanda do it. Like, what?
I don't know if Q invented this move.
No, I'm not saying she invented it, but it seems that they are all doing it very poorly and in a way that is either directly referencing Q, because they all seem to get a kick out of Q doing it, and they referenced it throughout the season. So I wonder if it was kind of like a... Have
been around long enough to see Q do it? When did Q do it the first time?
Didn't Q do it week one?
I don't know. I don't remember, honestly. Week one? But no, she didn't lip sync in the talent show one. Oh, I don't know.
No,
but yeah,
no, not this episode. Was where I meant the first episode they were all together.
Oh, perhaps. I can't remember. But... yeah, this is where I was like, oh, okay, Amanda just kind of like has her arsenal of moves and facial expressions and is just kind of going to do them to whatever song. So sorry, I know that's your winner of the season, but I...
No, it is not.
I was not...
No, she is not my winner of the season. I love Amanda. I think she's funny, but no, she is not my winner of the season. Okay, now are we ready for my... magnum opus of script lines? Round three included Maya versus Megami, and our dear little Maya was so confident, and yet...
Well, this is where the editing, I just hated the way they edited everyone being like, oh, yeah, Maya's got this, da-da-da, and you're like, okay, you're obviously setting us up for something, because you're not going to say all that and then have Maya just win. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I would have to look back and see like, oh, what did they edit out or whatever, but yeah, I was like, Maya, come on, time to do it. Do some flips. Even if you're just doing general flips, do them. Find something to do here. I know that we were told that Maya did not want this song for some reason. But I don't know. It's like a dancey, cheerleadery type of song. So I feel like it's a very flip-worthy, just flip all around the stage.
I don't know. I think Maya won this lip sync. I'm sorry.
Oh, really?
I do. I think she won. I think Maya at 65%, it was maybe better than what... I mean, Megami was... I think that Megami really... This episode is going to be so huge for Megami, because I think she got to show off a lot of the things that people were accusing her of not being able to do on this season. And I think that this is going to reroute the narrative for her and the fandom, and sort of the same way that it did for Silky back on All-Star 6. And I think you're going to see a lot of Megami love this weekend. But I still think that, like, in terms of like putting on a show and this specific lip sync, I was more drawn to Maya. But I do think Megami did a wonderful job. But just Maya just looks so pissed. She looks so upset. Even when they cut back to her, you know, watching, she looked hurt. And I also just think, in terms of, as we, you know, the recurring narrative that we talk about on this season a lot is the hand of production, I think, being more obvious than it has been in last seasons. And why would they not want the final showdown to be Maya versus Morphine, which is something that they directly referenced at the top of the episode? Like, why even put in that clip of them talking about having a Miami rematch if you're not going to have them even do it at all against each? Like, what was the point?
Yeah, I agree. I was wondering, I didn't think about that deeply, but I was wondering at first if it was because we had just seen them, that they were like, well, you know, like, we saw them, we kind of, like, so recently know what they're going to do. But yeah, if they were pointing out that rematch, then that doesn't make sense. Because I think even Megami winning one, and especially twice, would have given her the redemption. I don't know if she was so, like, it was definitely not to Silky levels of me, of, like, blowing me away of, like, oh, wow, this is, like...
Oh, no, that's not what I mean.
Changes everything, even though I always loved Silky before that anyway. But, yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, yes, like, I think if Megami ended up winning the whole thing, we would see, like, opposite, like, everyone kind of in a full outrage over it, but...
I don't mean that this was necessarily on par with what Silky was doing. I just think that it was... There seemed to be a general sentiment with Silky on All-Star 6 among the queens and the fandom that Silky wasn't doing enough. And then when Silky came back on the lip sync episode, that narrative completely changed for her because of how well she did in the lip syncs. And I think we're going to see a similar thing with Megami on this episode. I'm not saying that Megami was performing at the same level as Silky or with what Silky is doing, but I do think a lot of people, sort of even the queens on this cast, discounted Megami and didn't think she was capable of doing really great things. Like, we had that whole narrative of her being picked last for the girl group challenge. And it's like, because they all thought that Megami wasn't going to be a good performer. And then she turns around and gives us these really great performances and these lip syncs. So I think it's going to do a lot of good for Megami and her narrative in the fandom, the same way that it did for Silky.
Yeah, I think that what I wish, like the way Silky's mind works, if Silky were in Megami's shoes, I think she would have come out with that protect queer art sign or like done some kind of like play up of that, which I really wish Megami had done something like that. With a reference to it. I think that would have really
blown or me. Her little hand puppet holding up a little protect queer art.
Yes, somebody. But I mean, also, this is not, I mean, this is still while they're in production of the season. And although
so they don't know,
Plane had called her out for that, but she hasn't seen Plane's confessionals yet at this point. Right. So yeah, you're kind of, you don't know all of the callbacks that are going to be as important to the fandom.
Yeah.
So the final round sees Morphine versus Megami facing off to Gonna Make You Sweat, Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory, including Megami's attempt to outstupid Morphine's pure dance skills by bringing a little googly-eyed puppet with her, though Morphine ultimately wins the $50,000 prize and joins Raja in the Queen of She Already, no, She Done Already Done Had Hers' Hall of Fame. So, but which Raja, I don't remember even what Raja did.
They did the same thing on All Star 7.
And it was from this? I don't remember.
The Queen of She Done Already Done Had Hers' is.
I don't remember why.
Yeah, the Queen of She Done Already Done Had Hers' is $50,000.
It was from a lip sync Lollapalooza, though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it wasn't I don't think it was a Lollapalooza, but they all lip synced.
I just remember that plunger. Okay, so do we feel that the right queen won this?
Out of this lip sync?
Yeah.
Yes. Overall, I still think Maya should have been in the final against Morphine. But I think in this matchup, yes. I think that Morphine was the right winner.
When Megami pulled out the puppet, I was like, oh, she might actually... she might actually outstupid her if Morphine just kind of does, like, Morphine's got to be super tired at this point, and if she is doing just kind of the same couple of moves. But instead, Morphine really blew me away with the pure insanity of that butt jiggle. Like, I never want to see someone try to twerk or do anything if it's not to this level. Like, this is the level of making your butt jiggle that is acceptable to me. It just really blew me away. And then also she was there was something at the very end when she like shot her, basically, because there was like kind of that explosion noise and she
coming back a shotgun,
but like that still kind so of like funny. You know, I'm bored kind of way. I love that. So I think good. Morphine is definitely like the kind of show that I want to see. And yeah, and same with Maya. And so yeah, I would have love to see that. See if Morphine throws something on top of Maya this time.
Oh, that would have been so funny.
I am sad that we are not going to get to see that rematch, but maybe go to Miami someday and see them perform together.
And look up into the air to see Maya climbing on literal, like, you know, support systems for buildings.
I was thinking, I guess it would be definitely just like unfair advantage to Maya, but what if they had, like, they have this whole new stage. Why not put like a stripper pole there or some other like a big box or something that people could be maneuvering around? Because I like we have not seen like we've seen Maya do some of the moves. God. But if you like watch all of Maya's videos online, like she is capable of so much more. We have not seen her hanging from the rafters.
She almost did one. She almost did something on this episode when she did her handstand against the frame.
Wall, yeah.
But oh, my God, how funny would that be if next season the stage is like a literal gladiator arena where they just have like, there's a box, there's a stripper pole, there's a pool of water, there's a shower, there's like They're like, you can do with this what you please as you lip sync. That is so funny. Yeah. Hopefully no firearms though, so morphine. Oh my gosh. Because morphine's shotgun thing is so funny.
Table of puppets for people that
table of puppets. Well, we already kind of discussed about this earlier, but I guess we should talk about it again, because I mean the lip sync episodes in general, I think we covered that already, but did this count as a reunion?
I don't think so, because I mean it started to scratch the itch a little, and it was like getting to see something we don't always see of them, like having to say like, well, we got to recap it all for Hershey, like, and so I was like, oh, it would be really amazing to kind of see the first time that they all come together and really like, what do they say to each other about, you know, what the status is and everything. So that was getting fun, but we just got so little of it. And even like, we see them all walk in together. We don't even see the moment that they all, like, I wish the top three was there. And then they say, and here's all the other queens. And we could kind of see the moment of, I mean, the biggest thing we're missing, we did not see the first moment that Amanda and Plain came into contact with one another again. And then we got this teasing about it and this build up, and then we never even see them interact. When Amanda finally goes into the backstage area, like, we never see a shot of Plain or her even looking at each other. So that, not that I wanted like another giant blow up, but I was kind of like, all this build up, what's gonna happen? And then like, oh, nothing.
Right. So I don't think, like, unless next week's finale is structured like they have all the queens back on stage again, and we're just doing, you know, a normal reunion for the first half. And then the second, which I could honestly see happening, because I imagine it's going to be 2 hours. So I imagine maybe the first half could be this reunion like they used to do with all of the queens on stage with Rue. And then, or they bring, remember they used to bring them up in groups. So it'd be like the first eliminated, the middle eliminated, then the later ones. Maybe they do that. So we only have one more episode to go. What are our predictions for this finale that apparently takes a different form from what we've seen in the past, with only three queens competing in the finale for the first time since season 8? Like, who do we think will win overall?
Well, I think and hope Safira will win overall, but I really, I'm a little bit excited that I don't know what to expect from it, even though I'm disappointed there's not this big live finale in production. And I don't like that they already did it during the season, so there's just no time in between to...
Well, we actually don't know that for sure yet, because that has not been announced.
Okay, well, I get, that's true.
So they could have had just a giant finale that they just didn't invite anybody
to. They didn't invite anyone to, any of us, anyone we know that covers Drag Race. Like, okay, that would be a gag, but
it's an empty theater, like RuPaul sitting in the theater watching the Emmys back in...
I mean, I would like to know how this studio audience got invited. Maybe it's this yawning woman again.
Oh my God, it's Dave.
Yes, Dave.
Dave's friends.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, yeah, I will miss the spectacle of that.
Me too.
If that's the case, but I guess I am excited to see a return to the olden days and what that's going to look like with three people and having this finale. I don't know if it will seem lackluster or not. I mean, All Stars don't have live finales or like big theater finales, so...
The Golden Bachelor, the olden Drag Race. Oh my God, the olden days. I also think there is an element of excitement to it. It feels interesting to see that, or you know, that we have like literally no tea on the finale going. Usually we have tea on the finale going into this, and we have literally none. So it's pretty exciting. And I mean, personally, like, I think I'm Team Safira in this, and also, like, objectively using my prognosticator brain, I'm gonna do what I didn't do last year in my predictions post, and I'm going to listen to my gut and, you know, well-informed expertise, and predict that Safira Cristal is going to win this season, because last year I was getting into too many, like, oh, well, does the show want to like take drag in a new direction and like have this arc for Sasha Colby to come back for All Stars? And I like had convinced myself, okay, maybe they like, and if this is going to be a lip sync, like the new generation of drag, Anitra is going to pull out this crazy lip sync and just shock everybody. And I was very, very wrong. And I never should have doubted Mother.
Okay, so I'm predicting Plain Jane. But because RuPaul is such a kick out of her.
And I should clarify, I did not doubt Mother. It was my own like conflicted thoughts, like trying to think what the show was going to do versus what, you know, not limiting in terms of what Sasha Colby can actually do. Because famously, I had faith in her from the beginning, whereas somebody else was captured.
Just because I didn't, I'm proud to have kept my mind open, not jumped on a bandwagon just because I wasn't aware of her. I didn't pretend like, oh, I'm going to pretend like I've been following her career for 2 decades.
Still,
like some people, not you, but I think a lot of fans.
Still, I think Jillian, one of my top three favorite Jillian Closet moments in history has to be after that entire season of discourse between you and I, the first time we see you on this finale episode is literally they cut after Sasha Colby walks out on stage to you standing up and applauding, which was your Slack profile picture for ages.
It's still my Instagram photo.
It's so funny.
Yes.
Oh, and also shout out to Alec Mappa for thinking that he interacted with me at the finale that I was not at. Confusing Actually, me I think for you were, someone else.
I also thought you were sitting in front of me for a few hours. But turned out to not be.
Oh my god. Stay tuned. Coming up, backbending into your ear holes, is our interview with Evie Oddly. Welcome back to EW's Quick Drag Podcast, where today we welcome back one of our favorite guests. We know them as the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race Season 11 and the mother of some jaw-dropping looks on her All-Star 7 return. And now she is about to backbend back into rotation once again with her upcoming memoir, All About Evie, Into the Oddity, which is out June 19th, here to discuss the book. And since they are one of our favorite lip-sync performers in Drag Race history, the Season 16 Lollapalooza, please welcome back the divine Evie Oddly. How are you?
Hi.
Howdy. Good morning after evening.
Yes. Well, we've heard that you have had some interesting evenings lately. What is this news that you are apparently coming off fucking a cheesecake?
What? I didn't know my business was out there like that.
You famously retweeted a tweet saying this.
Who won a new prize?
Yeah, okay, so I did. Not only am I one of the esteemed winners of RuPaul's Drag Race, but I also just won a sexy food eating competition at Fat Slut here.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm changing career paths as of a few nights ago.
And this bit with the cheesecake is real? That person was not kidding?
I don't know if there was a whole lot of cheesecake left when I was done with it, but that was only the dessert, too. It's like they didn't even care about the dinner.
Oh, gosh. Well, maybe we'll see videos of that online someday. Who's to say? Who knows?
Yeah, as long as they follow internet guidelines, you know.
Well, shifting gears, we just want to say congratulations on this new book. I mean, it's going to be very interesting. And I think because you've done so much with your career, so it's really exciting to see this, forgive the pun, new chapter in your story. And I mean, I want to get into a lot of the fun things that we love about you and your career later, but I think we should focus on this book first, because reading off the description of the book, it does detail, it says childhood trauma, your gender identity journey, turbulent relationships with people you've met through the show. So my first question is, like, what was the most difficult thing for you to discuss or reveal in this book that you never have before?
Honestly, there's not one aspect of it that wasn't very painful for me. I mean, if you've seen me on Drag Race before, you know I'm an emotional person. You know that I have no issues talking about the things that are weighing on me. And so the interesting thing about this book is, you know, I sat down with Michael, the author, and we talked about everything, every detail. And he let me rant, cry, blow out the connection on on our headphones, you know. So it's very hard because, you know, these are the things that I'll rant to a stranger at a bar or to my mom. But, you know, there's a whole lot of me in this book. I'd like to say more than has ever been able to fit on even the sexiest, longest episodes of Drag Race.
Well, is there maybe something in particular that you were maybe hesitant about putting into the book, but then you like specific moments that maybe might surprise people?
I mean, it's also no secret that I've opened my mouth quite a few times whenever I have issues with like contestants, producers, you know, anything in the Drag Race world, because I'm a fan as much as I am a competitor / a winner. So, you know, I'm always hesitant to go back and even speak about the things that I've said. Usually when I open my mouth, it leads to conversations that I can have with the people it's directed for. So always a little nervous about that. I'm always nervous to disclose, you know, more of like what's going on in my life and my health and stuff, because those are weird conversations to have with a stranger on the street. You know, it's like one thing to like meet somebody you've never met before and have them be like, oh my gosh, I love this moment of you where you like flipped your hair and we all died, it was so slay. It's a whole nother thing to have somebody be like, no, but how are you doing?
Yeah,
like, how are you really doing? And I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I would tell any random stranger on the street that, but now that you asked.
Well, it is interesting because you do talk. I mean, the book description says that there is talk of a traumatic childhood here. So what kinds of things do you discuss there in this book that might surprise people, and how has it impacted you getting those things out on the page?
I grew up in a house with a very lovely, loving family, with actually so much lovely, loving family that I can't even describe it as one. I just know I grew up loved, but, you know, that didn't come without its fair share of trials and tribulations. I spoke actually on All Stars about growing up in an abusive household. And it's definitely something that shaped a lot of the person that I've become, the person I try not to be, the person I want to be. So that's it. If I have to give you a straight answer to the question you asked like three questions ago, the hardest thing I could think of probably to talk about was like my relationship with my stepdad, because he was like the first a homophobic bully I ever had. And there was so much of me that hated him so long for that. But, you know, he does still love me. And I've had to like learn that we're all going to make mistakes and we're all going to hurt people. And we're all going to, unfortunately, sometimes pass down the hurt that was passed down to us. Yeah. But, you know, everybody's going to die someday. So would you rather be smiley, happy, on good terms with them, or just remember every time they've hurt you?
That's a really interesting way of looking at it, because I think a lot of people choose to maybe just internalize the things and not, but confronting it in that way, I imagine, it's a very difficult thing to do. Do you remember the moment when you realized that it's better to maybe accept, process, and move on versus harboring something?
There is no one moment, because, you know, the harboring is still there. You don't forget your formative memories, for starters. You don't forget the shit that you saw as a little kid that really made you who you are. But it's really hard to forget the pain. It's just, instead of dwelling on what that is, it's finding the empathy in the situation. Like, for me, this may be sick as fuck, but I love that I get to watch him get older. I'm like, oh, life is gonna make you old. Oh, you could have been the meanest, baddest, like rudest motherfucker, but You know, if you're lucky, you will live a long life and you will be humbled. Mm-hmm. And yes, I will call you on Easter because I do love you and you deserve that.
I mean, it's hard for, I think, a lot of people to wrap their head around that kind of dynamic because it's so foreign to so many people. So it's I'm glad that you have sort of reached that place where it's become something that you can fully grasp that you're able to do. And I also wonder, you know, because so you're saying this is with your stepdad, a lot of people have really embraced your father, who we saw on the show. Like, I mean, I always, you know, used to always kick off interviews with you asking how he was. This doesn't have anything to do.
He's fine, by the way. He says hi and blows a kiss.
Thank you, Daddy Oddly. I'm just wondering, this doesn't cross over into territory with him, does it?
I mean, not distinctly, but I will, not to give too much away in my book, but there's a lot about my relationships growing up that are really centered about my mother, because she was the most important person to me. And maybe it's because I was, you know, a tiny little faggy gay mama's boy who just like saw that she was the person who was gonna nurture my emotional needs the way that tiny little queers need. But you know, I have a good relationship with my father, a very good relationship, especially after reading my story. I learned reading like this book back so much about the relationship between my parents and like how I even came into this world, and that kind of just flat out their views on like my childhood, how I was brought up and how I was brought to be. And it helped me realize that everything is so much more complex than I could ever understand, but doubly so when I had like four father figures growing up. Wow. That is so spoiled.
The book also chronicles your gender identity and coming out. What sorts of things can we expect you to talk about in that regard to your gender journey?
You can expect me to say very rude, inflammatory comments.
About yourself?
Yes, what?
It's usually about myself. It's primarily about myself. Yeah, no, I mean, the book just explores how I've always dealt with gender, how I identify, kind of how I express myself, how that comes in and out of drag, and the reasons why I've not ever been really vocal about my gender when there's so much other queerness going on in my life.
So you'll leave that more for the book to speak about that in the book, you think?
Yeah, I got to. But if anyone wants to know any pronouns, just pick some.
Oh, okay. Because we try to always go based. I see you have them listed on your Instagram. So we went with those ones.
Right? The only thing that sucks is Instagram cuts them off after the real ones. It won't let me add my fake pronouns like for when I'm in full drag and I'm like, my pronouns are puss and cunt.
Those too. Well, though I do look forward to reading those things as well. This does seem like you packed a lot into this book. And, you know, it's for a lot of people who think they already know so much about you after the world was introduced to you as the winner of Drag Race Season 11. So is there anything, I know we got into it back a few years ago when we did the Binge podcast, but is there anything you've never revealed before about your time on Season 11 or All-Star 7, like funny or wild moments that we never saw?
I'm trying to remember if any of my favorite moments ever make it into anything, whether that was the shows, our old interviews, or even this book. I mean, that's the thing, is I'm an open book, so there's a million moments I talk about in here. The fun part for me was this book also includes interviews from some of my season 11 sisters. Oh, so I get to hear their perspectives. Once again, super unfiltered because they didn't have to talk to me about it.
Who was the most candid? Was there anybody, like, who was the most candid and who surprised you with their interviews?
I don't have a real answer for that. Everybody has learned how to be the right amount of candid. Now we are dealing with professionals. Okay. Yeah. I will say, as ever, Brooklyn is just like shockingly cunty, whether or not she means to be. And Silky will forever be like my counterpart in the fact that we both feel the way we feel. And we've learned that the way we feel is not maybe the way we should be acting all the time. But that will not deep down change underneath the way we feel and why we feel the way we feel.
Yes. The tongue is twisting. The tongue is twisting. Yes.
Which is why she's like one of my good Judies.
I love her so much. We love it. This is, you know, a Silky Stan podcast, I think, as Jillian and I have said many times.
Oh, she is so good, especially when you're not competing against her. You're like, wow, I love you so much. Now that I don't have to like try and put up with your bullshit in a competitive format.
Now, did you have a part in selecting what was getting cut from those interviews and what was making the book?
No, nor did I really want to. That's what was so interesting about this for me, is it was like this thing I've heard other people do where they go to therapy. You know, and then they like talk about their life and they delve back into the deep stuff. And we're like, oh my gosh, that's why I have a fear of like fish or whatever. The band.
we all have that.
Yes. I don't know. So I think it was really nice because it was a form of therapy in that way for me. And then getting to eventually go back and just read what Michael had gotten from all of these people, like my parents, my friends, my one-time nemesis, like there was just so much. And on one hand, it feels so egotistical to sit here and like be reading what all these bitches are saying about you in a book with your name on it. But in the other, I was like, wow, that was really juicy. Yeah. I feel like I got a better picture of at least how, you know, a handful of other people in the world could perceive me, which is, I think, what we all really want, especially when you put on as much makeup and heels and wiggery and tape in your bits and places as drag queens do. You want people to tell you how they feel about you, but you want it to usually mostly be positive and about how gorgeous you are and how few STDs you've gotten this week.
Oh, my God.
So, like you said, you've been an open book. And one thing you have been open about is you've been critical of the show's producer since All Star 7, but the show also gave you a worldwide platform. Is there part of you that regrets doing Drag Race at this point? You've said in the past that you hadn't, but what is your current stance on what you went through with and what your issues with production are?
I mean, there is always going to be like one part of you, no matter what you do in life, that wonders like what you could have done if you didn't do one thing. But as far as like solid regret goes, there's no way I could regret doing Drag Race. It changed my life, and it changed my life so dramatically before I was ever a part of it that my biggest regret would be if I didn't get to experience the possibility of your dreams coming true. Like, how often do you get to be a part of something that is so important to you and so important to so many people around you? And now that I've like been some places, it's wild to see how many people it's important to, like, around the world. So like, I don't regret that, and I never will regret that. That being said, you know, I'm a person who really enjoys the bigger picture and getting to see every aspect and every side of something, which is why their interviews from my season 11 sisters, you know, talking a little shit about me in my book. And so if I see something that I don't like or something that like I think could be better, I'm going to voice how I feel, even if it means jeopardizing my whole career path, the franchise, the fans I made, how people view whether or not I deserve to be a part of anything, whether I'm just like a spoiled brat or whether I'm just somebody who really loves this and will also do anything to protect it.
Well, the notes on your book indicate a little bit about that love-hate relationship with fans that you were just hinting at. Can you explain a little more about what that means and what you've been through with the fans?
I love my fans, unless I tell you I love you. If I have ever told you I love you, I am bold-faced lying to you. No. It's just hard. It's hard because I think it took me... it took me a minute to adjust to having fans at all, to having people who are passionate about what I'm doing, saying, being, looking. It took some adjustment, and it was a rough, bumpy period, I think, on both sides of our relationship. Mm-hmm. Well, I got used to the fact that everything that used to just be mine is now the world's. And you know, I've learned how to like put my own boundaries on my relationships with my fans, but also realize that if people are that invested in what you have to say, do or be, it's because they need something out of it. And who am I to deprive a need?
Yes. Well, one of the things that I think I loved about the All-Star 7 press tour, I'm thinking back now, wasn't it interaction? Well, maybe it could be classified as an interaction with fans, but was your appearance on The View. We cover The View a lot at EW, and you did famously play Whoopi on Snatch Game. So do you have famously, which I am on record on that podcast saying I did not think was as awful as some people thought it was. But do you have any behind the scenes tea or funny memories from the set that day with the co-hosts?
I am just so thankful that there's no way that I meant as much in her memory as she meant in mine. Like when they were like, yeah, we're going to go on The View, I immediately contemplated unaliving myself.
Oh, no. Like,
there's any other way to like deal with the mistakes that you made as a twink than having to go publicly on camera forever and ever with somebody who you know you fucked up an impersonation of, but who you also know does not give a single shit. Like, out of her long, lengthy career and the number of people who have done impersonations of Whoopi, I maybe was just a recent speck.
Well, she has been on Drag Race as a guest judge, so okay, like she knows
that
the
was
show.
Rude because that was after me. That was after me.
True, but did you? So you did you talk to her about it at all? Your Snatch Game performance.
I feel so bad about this, but I like have I nervous blanked out like 90% of the interaction. If my husband wasn't there to like force stand me by her because he also is in love with her, I don't know if I'd have like any recollection of it existing. I just like scrub it out of my head, just like my Whoopi performance on Snatch Game. Just gone. Just oh. Okay, that's okay. I don't remember why I lip-synced that week, but boy, was it a good one.
Yeah, you know what? We're all so thankful that your impression maybe wasn't the best because led to
that lip-sync.
One of the best lip-syncs in the history of the show.
Yes.
And speaking of lip-syncs, we do want to move on to season 16 and ask you about this recent episode of Lala Perusa, which was an all lip-sync episode. Did you have any favorites? What did you think of the episode? And what were the best, worst moments to you as a lip sync assassin? The show's first official returning lip sync assassin when they introduced that. What are your thoughts on
the first
episode?
Evie Oddly, the first of the lip sync of the assassins of the All-Stars. The murderer of one India of the Pharaoh. Redeemer of the Ricky Martin. No, I loved this episode, I have to say.
Me too.
I loved it. I have to say, I've loved this season. I think that the producers, Rue, the girls, there's just like a lot that's been changed up this season that's felt really fresh and like alive. And, you know, cutting a reunion and replacing it with a lip sync SmackDown, it fed my soul, especially because I'm always afraid when they do these reunions that like everyone's going to go in and be like, yeah, we have so much to say. And then you get there and the cameras are on and you suddenly remember that freeze fans up. Are talking about you and you're like, yeah, so I just meant to say I'm sorry. Like, throw a wig, throw a shoe. And you know what? We got all of that because of a lip sync SmackDown. So for starters, loved that.
Yeah.
Love that. And it also like gave everybody a chance to do the one thing that I think we as fans love to see happen on the show. And, you know, maybe it wasn't your week one week. Maybe you didn't know the words to RuPaul's favorite Cher song. Here's your chance to come back and hopefully know the words to another one of RuPaul's favorite Cher songs.
Oh, sorry to Mirage. Well, do you have, were there standout moments for you? Like, do you think, who would you personally have picked to win this whole Lollapalooza?
I mean, going in, I expected Maya Mon LePage to be in the finale.
Me too. Yeah.
And going in, I expected Morphine to kind of be there with her in the finale. So I was like, okay, it's going to be Maya versus Morphine unless they like go off at the beginning. And somehow, like my dreams really came true because I have to say, I am such a Megami stan. I'm such a fucking Megami stan. I was rooting for her to do better when she lip synced against Maya going home on the season. Yeah. I was like, no, bitch, we get that part of the story. Show us your character development. You're in verse 2 now. No, you know? And everything that I wanted out of that one lip sync, she ended up giving me from the jump. So like from her first lip sync, I was like, okay, never mind. I'm a fuck whatever my things were before. I want to see Megami go all the way. And I think she slayed. The only other shocking thing for me is, and this is no hate and definitely no love to either of the girls involved, but Plasma totally won her lip sync. Plasma, the three-way lip sync, Plasma totally won that. People can hate her little old granny wig. They can hate her personality. But, bitch, she nailed an 8-count and gave me entertainment that I wasn't expecting.
I saw somebody call her Sierra.
Yeah, she was. The spirit of Sierra entered her tiny white body for 8 whole counts. And she slammed it.
As someone who's pulled off some of the most impressive moves and flawless wig reveals on the show, where do you land in this debate of whether queens are relying too much on tricks and flips in lip syncs? When is the appropriate time to pull out the stunts?
I hate that people even want to debate that. Like, shut up. You did not go to school for lip syncing, you uneducated unlip syncer.
Oh god.
How many assassins have you killed with your lip sync abilities? Ooh,
good
okay.
Point. Yeah.
Okay.
Good point.
Because there is no one approach to any one lip sync. It's ultimately about what is going to be the most entertaining and move the most waves. When you're talking about on the format of that show, the most entertaining lip syncs for me personally are the ones, and this isn't even on the girls, are the ones where like there's a song choice that really gives the energy to each of the competitors to be like, no, this is my moment. And, you know, there's so many different ways to express that, you know, like really good acting, like shading a bitch during the lip sync and doing killer backflip splits tricks, all the gags. I just think, as somebody who's consumed a lot of lip syncs on the show, of course there are going to be so many bitches who don't know the best time or how gaggy it actually will or will not be to see the 300th girl do a jump spin into a split at the verse of a very slow ballad. Offbeat.
Offbeat.
You had to add it.
Do you have any tips that you would have given to these girls if they had brought you in, and would you ever return as like an official lip sync tip giver coach on the show?
Oh my
like
God,
as a coach, what would you have said to these queens?
I would love to see that.
I mean, it's the same thing I feel whenever I'm trying to plan out lip syncs or about to lip sync for my life, and I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do? You have to think of like the bigger picture. Who are you going against? What is the song? What story are you going to be telling? So think about those first. And then after that, think about like whether or not people have seen what you're going to do before. Is it going to shock somebody? Because even if you are not crowned the winner of the lip sync, people will forever be in your DMs like, that was crazy. You slayed Raja. She's like 80. Or whatever.
sorry to
I am not. She is the queen of She Already Done Has Hers.
That's
she
true.
Won that. I won the lip sync. That is how it's going down in my mind forever.
Yes. Well, this has been, Evie, this has just been so fun, and I you know, we appreciate your candor, and so it's only fitting for the last thing for us to ask you is, who do you want to win season 16?
It's been all over the place. But when we are down to the nitty gritty and we are talking about the person that I have to see in posters and gigs near me, because I am also a winner,
that's
the
right.
person mm-hmm. I may have to compete against in All Winners 37, I really want to see Nymphia there. And oh. I think she is just immaculately talented. And I think we need to take somebody who is that good at making clothes off of the market. Never give her that time ever again.
Oh my God.
Make sure she is too busy so that she is ugly and at our level.
No, that is a very Evie Oddly answer.
but you are confirming that there is a chance we could see you on All Winners 37 one day.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
That door's not closed.
I would totally go back for All Winners 37. I think by then, they will be ready to admit the fact that I'm legitimately one of the best drag queens that has ever been on that show mm-hmm. in every way, including Snatch Game.
Or they're just taking you off the market so that you can be ugly from there. Yes.
Just to keep cheesecake safe around the
world. Evie, we can't thank you enough. You truly are, like I said at the beginning, one of our favorite guests. You are always so much fun. And, you know, thank you so much again for being so candid and for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank y'all for having me. And,
yeah.
And thank you for letting me plug my new book, All About Evie, available everywhere books are available on June 19th.
Thank you once again to Evie Oddly for joining us for a fabulous interview.
If you enjoyed this episode, please dance your finger down to the rating button and give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast, because it helps us bring you more exclusive chats with drag talent.
Tune in next week for our coverage of the final episode of RuPaul's Drag Race season 16, featuring Joey's exclusive interview with the winning queen. Until then,
have a googly night. Quick Drag is an Entertainment Weekly podcast hosted and produced by Joey Nolfi and Jillian Cederholm, produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Thanks for listening.
This weather. Cloudy weather. Ooh!